sound set.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Export prices up, import prices down. Dow over 18,000 again, and stimulus fever is hitting in a big way across global markets. All this and much more on episode number 408 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Well, hello and welcome. Andrew Horowitz here, and you are listening to the Disciplined Investor Podcast for the mid part of April 2015. So glad that you are with me. So glad that you are taking the opportunity and time out of your day to listen in on some of more of the important items related to financial markets around the world. And it was an interesting week. We have plenty of things to talk about. There's no question about that. Maybe the bigger question is, where do we begin, right? I mean, we've had so many things that are going on in the world in terms of, I guess stimulus is, it's got to be the number one thing that has really been in the news. You know, we talk about the Fed a lot and how they have really been affecting markets here in the U.S. in a positive and negative manner. We've had the whole idea that they were going to increase rates maybe in June. Maybe they were going to start drawing back some of the excessive amount of bond buying that they are doing, but that's probably not the case. Maybe they'll increase interest rates ever so slightly because we're seeing better economics. And lo and behold, we saw that shift around quite considerably when all of a sudden there wasn't the the economics that were supporting the data as much, at least from the aspect of an investor, from the markets. Even though the last Fed minutes still talked about a rate hike probably in the second part of this year, which is consistent with what they've been talking about for some time, the fact still remains that there is a good group of people that believe, I think, first of all, that probably there'll never be any kind of raise in rates in our lifetime, but more so with the recent economics that we're seeing that have been very soft. Again, last week, we saw that manufacturing was a bit soft. We saw that there was the prior week a significant drop in new jobs added. Already we're seeing that there's a lot of people talking about how the aberration was more so due to the holiday and seasonality, some of the weather that was involved in this. But yet, when we look at the totality of the economics that we're seeing recently, I think it's pretty clear that there has been a pretty good drop in the trend, a slowdown in domestic economics. Now, that being the case, that's brought a lot of a really good amount of those that are saying that stimulus is going to be very slow to be removed from markets. And I can't really argue that at this point. And it makes a lot of sense that there is that, you know, overall thought process that is going on. And probably why we're seeing that markets have really enjoyed a nice turnaround. And when we look at the VIX, have you looked at the VIX? The VIX, what is it now? It's at 12.58, cracked the 13 level. And VIX products, which are, for example, UVXY, VXX, and many of those that bet on the long side of the VIX in terms of ETFs now, ETFs I'm talking about, have just recently turned in, once again, historic lifetime lows for those particular index products. Now, when you use these kinds of investment tools, which are linked to a particular index, and particularly those that are inverse or those that have a significant amount of leverage use them. So, for example, UVXY never really seems to work very well. It really stays on the shorter-term side of the VIX. There's a couple different VIX you could look at, the short-term VIX, mid-term, and long-term. It doesn't parallel very well. And this particular investment, if you've looked at what's gone on with this investment, it's very, I find it to be kind of, I don't know why they allow for this to continue on. You would think that the regulators would come in and what they would do is shut this down, but not seemingly the case these days. Even though these things don't track well, and the only way they seem to go up is if there is an inverse split of the shares. We've used these, you know, from time to time. You can use these on a short-term basis where there is maybe a 1 or 2 day aberration, maybe even a week. Maybe I'll even go out a month, possibly, if there's a trend that's moving in your direction. But these are oftentimes much better on the short side. If you've looked at what happens when there is this move of the VIX to the downside, these things get obliterated. The long VXX and UVXY just get absolutely hammered. Now, you could play the other side. It doesn't really track as well on the other side, like SVXY, SVXY is the symbol there. And I don't think that tracks as well. But on the other hand, you could have shorted many of these ETFs and had a pretty good run with them. Nonetheless, right now we're seeing that the VIX is very low, and a lot of this has to do with the fact that the stimulus that has been put upon the global markets by governments around the world has been absolutely incredible and absurd at the same time. In fact, we're seeing about, I think it's 28 different countries around the world have provided a rate cut, some kind of stimulus that has been added to the global environment this year alone. This year alone. That's pretty amazing if you think about it. This year we're seeing that the amount of stimulus in this short of a period of time has topped anything that I've seen in quite a long time, if ever. I don't think I've ever seen as much. And you got to wonder, what does that mean? How is that playing out? Well, I think we're seeing that the global economic environment is pretty bad. China, we'll talk about that in a second, their market, quite amazing what's going on this week. But China has been slowing down precipitously, and that has been a very big problem because it is a combination of what's going on in Europe, even though Europe is looking a little better in terms of some of their output, some of their economic fundamentals. Germany's looking a lot better. We saw some nice numbers out of there. Italy actually picked up a little bit, Spain as well. But China is slowing down. There's a lot of reasons why. There's some internal reasons why this is happening. They're trying to cut down on a lot of the, we'll call it the bad players that have been doing all sorts of very troubling types of counting when it comes to their economic numbers. We've seen that before with the imports, exports, of course. We're seeing a crackdown on Macau. We're seeing a crackdown on many of the purchases that have gone on by government leaders and the excessive and eccentric types of purchases that have gone on. This is all playing into a slowdown, but on the other hand, they're really trying to get things in order. And if it means that it's going to have to take a toll on their economy short term to provide a long-term benefit and a clarification for investors of really what's happening on the underlying economics, I think that's a good thing. Well, meanwhile, if you didn't see it last week, it was mind-boggling. There was a few different announcements that went on in China. One of them was that there was going to be additional allowances for mutual funds in the area to actually purchase shares on various exchanges. Now, when that happened and you added the fact that the prior week, 1.5 million new retail accounts were opened and leverage or margin utilized to purchase stocks by retail investors hit an all-time high. Remember, this is something a few months ago that China tried to crack down on. They were really worried about all of the excessive amount of margin and leverage that was being used to buy stocks. Well, meanwhile, now we have a situation where even though that hurt markets just temporarily, it seemed to be just, okay, well, you guys didn't like it, forget about it. We're not gonna bother with that again. We're not gonna cause any problems with that again. And now we're at an all-time high when it comes to margin accounts and leverage that's being used to buy stocks by individuals inside of China. Millions of accounts opened up on a weekly basis. telling us that the retail investor is just in a frenzy. Then we get the announcement that the markets are going to be opened up to institutional investors. And what happens? The Hong Kong Exchange, after the holiday, when it finally opened, was up on one of the days 7% intraday. 7%. Now, it closed up only about 2.5% or 3% for that day, which tells me two things. First of all, that was pretty amazing. I mean, you don't often see a market up 7% in an individual day. I mean, it's just remarkable. Second thing is, well, it did drop down about 4% from the high and came down the following day. So the amount of enthusiasm there was short-lived and could have been what we call an exhaustion or a blow-off top. When you look at how well that exchange and has done this year, and we're talking about now, let me give you some numbers through ETFs. We track all these ETFs. And remember something, with ETFs, you have to take in consideration that there is a currency exchange potential benefit or detraction from this. But I want to share this with you. The China large cap, FXJ, is up year-to-date 22% year-to-date. The China market's up about, in local terms, about 90% on an annual basis, one year-to-year, over that period, about 90%. Now, Hong Kong is up 17%, up 10% the month-to-date. We're talking about, what, 5 or 6 trading days? And it's up close to 10%. Japan's up 15%. Philippines up 12% year-to-date. Emerging markets, EEM, the symbol EEM, which is an ETF, up 9%. So you're seeing that all of the Asian areas are doing just incredibly well, given the fact that, number one, they have stimulus that is being poured into their economy, but number two, I think more importantly, and probably something that we really have to focus on, is that their economies are not doing well, which once again leads us to the belief that our markets right now are so attuned and sensitized to stimulus that it's somewhat frightening. The worst economies that have the most stimulus are seeing their markets go bananas. Look at, for example, the entire market structure in Europe. I mean, Germany's up, 22%. You see that Italy and Spain up in the 20% range. And this is on a non-currency adjusted basis, on local terms. That's pretty amazing. Pretty remarkable on a year-to-date basis. We're talking about 3.5 months into the year. And some of the worst countries and worst ETFs that have performed incredibly poorly last year are really picking up. The number one right now, Russia. Russia year-to-date is up 28%. That's the RSX index, 28%. And that's with oil in the, we'll call it the 52 range. Now, oil is up pretty well from its bottom. There's still sanctions on Russia, and I haven't seen anything change in terms of the threats or the amount of sanctions that's put upon Russia. Now, there has been some talk about them pulling out of, or at least a ceasefire, and that's good, and things kind of calming down in Ukraine. Okay, that's good. But still, their economy is teetering on massive recession, probably close to a depression. Banks still having a lot of problems. Oil prices still depressed dramatically from where they were, under the levels that they can have profitability for their main companies, and commodity prices are in the toilet. These are all part and parcel of what's important for Russia. Meanwhile, their stock market's up 28% this year. Talk about a reversion to the mean or a rotation strategy taking hold. And even with the fact that commodities are so depressed, Australia's ETF is up 6.2%, EWA. India up 7.8%. But I think that when you look at the year-to-date numbers, it's really quite amazing when you compare the fact that U.S. is, we'll call it flat to up 2%. And that's in the face of higher interest rates, a much higher dollar, and we do know that earnings releases and analyst expectations for next quarter is showing about a 5 to a 6% drop in earnings. 5 to 6% drop in earnings compared to a year ago. Now, the one positive thing you could say about that, because we did just see the start to earnings season with Alcoa coming out, and they did beat very nicely, but they guided down significantly. Their outlook was very poor. Stock was up initially, came down about 3 or 4% after the announcement. And I think you're going to see a lot of this negative guidance. Now, again, we do know, we've talked about this 100 times, about how companies will do a lot of massaging of analyst expectations to try to draw them down so they can just come out, and when their earnings are released, they can beat by a penny or two. But revenues are not looking good either. Expectations are, again, for a 5 to 6% drop in earnings on the S&P 500 moving forward. Meanwhile, we're almost at an all-time high in the S&P 500. Now, tell me how that makes any sense. Now, is there an immediate crash going to come? Well, no. Why? Well, because we have 28 different countries coming out with stimulus. We have Japan's pension plan saying that they're going to invest around the world. We have not only hedge funds doing a chase to outperform, but also we have sovereign wealth funds around the world that are flush with money due to the fact of all the stimulus that are looking for places to invest. And they see that economically, the U.S., even though we're slowing down, still far better than the rest of the world. Our bonds are so much higher in yield than Europe. So why not take that money that you're getting from the stimulus in Europe, take it, put it into your accounts, and then buy the bonds in the U.S.? Short the bonds in Europe, short the euro, buy the bonds in the U.S., buy the dollar. That's the play. As a matter of fact, last week was one of the best weeks for the dollar after we saw the dollar come down significantly in about 2 years, 2 or 3 years. One of the best weeks for the dollar in terms of strength. And that was on a Fed minutes that was probably at best neutral, not dovish, not hawkish. So keep a watch on this. This rotation is really fascinating. Now, the worst country that we're seeing right now on a year-to-date basis, a couple of them, Turkey, down about 12.5%. On a year-to-date basis, that's the ETF-TUR. And Brazil, which continues to be just an absolute disaster with all of the problems that they're having with Petrobras and Vale. Remember something. Brazil is a major commodity-driven country. Not only that, if you look at EWZ, now the components have changed a little bit recently because Petrobras has dropped off a cliff. I mean, down 75 or 80% from its high. Now, Petrobras was one of the major component. I think at one point it probably was close to like 25% of the Brazilian ETF, of the Brazilian index. Kind of like what's going on with Apple. It just got bigger and bigger, but the difference is much less, much fewer companies inside of the Brazilian stock market that make up the stock market. But the EWZ, the Brazilian ETF, had a big component of Petrobras. And as Petrobras is seeing all sorts of problems, not only with the price of oil, but with internal issues with regard to possible deception and just all the problems they have. And by the way, a lot of it is government owned. So that gives you, again, another feature of what happens when governments own securities like what's gone on in China. And when there is state-owned companies. Anyway, so Brazil, you'll see now the components are a lot less in favor of Petrobras because it dropped so much. But they are a major commodity-driven country, and many of the constituents inside of their ETF, inside of their market, and the main market index is related to commodities. So when you see the pricing go as it has, we know that there's a lot of problems. Well, I would keep a watch on that. I'm not a real big fan of EWZ. I'd rather look at like EEM, which has had a much better return this year because you get the commodities-driven countries, but a lot more inside the emerging markets as well. I think that could be a much better play. The continuation of that trend and the separation of the performance of the emerging markets, even though the dollar is higher, which really should not be playing well into that situation. You shouldn't see as much of a benefit with the emerging markets with the dollar rising as it is, but it is a function of stimulus right now. So all that stimulus money is really pumping things in. And you gotta recognize that at this point, clearly, governments, central banks are very much attuned to the fact that they're in control. They have the power to lift markets. They may not have the power to do anything about their economy, but they clearly have the power to lift markets and to play havoc with bond markets. Now, once again, we did see that the bond market reacted unfavorably. In other words, yields went down. But then again, price went up. A lot more people were buying bonds once again, even into this rally with the markets that we saw. Even with the VIX dropping and volatility dropping, because the thought is that the Fed is just going to keep the pedal to the metal for some time. And again, if not that, remember, the buyers of bonds are not only domestic. The fight to go find yield around the world by many of the pension funds, sovereign wealth funds, hedge funds, mutual funds that are required possibly to buy only government debt. Where are they going to look? The 7-year bond in Germany has turned negative, meaning that if you were to buy a bond, a 7-year bond in Germany, you'll have to pay a premium. I think it's about 103 for, I guess it's less than a 0.3% yield. So when you calculate it out, when the bond matures and you get your yield minus the amount that you have to lose due to the fact there's a premium, about a $3 premium, you're actually going to go negative. So if you put in $1,000 and you calculate the interest that you get, et cetera, and then by the time you turn the bond in, you'll get back, let's call it $995, let's just say as an example. So the net return is a loss. Now you're probably wondering, why the hell would anybody do that? Well, because the whole idea is, well, maybe through the ECB's bond purchase program, their quantitative easing program, they're going to continue to look for these kind of things. They're going to continue buying these bonds. And maybe not now, maybe next year, because they're going to continue with the pressure and buying these things, that 103 that I paid, maybe the bond's worth 105 now. It'll go more negative. I'm not going to wait to maturity. I'm going to sell out beforehand. And a lot of bond investors are looking to get the capital gain on the bond rather than waiting for maturity. Here's where the rub is. And this is the same thing in the U.S., but in a different scale because the U.S. bonds are still positively yielding, right? They're not a negative yield at this point. The fact is that when and if the time comes that they take their foot off the pedal, when they change their bond purchase program, if ever in Europe, there's going to be a massive exodus, which will essentially collapse their market. Liquidity won't be there. There'll be a stampede and a run to sell bonds. And because you want to get out, because, listen, the difference is here. If you buy bonds and you want to get out, you know, okay, well, you know, I'm making some money on it, at least through the yield. There, you're starting out at a negative yield. You're starting out if nothing changes. Everything stays absolutely status quo right now till the end of the time when you decide to sell that bond. You are going to lose money. Especially if you sell it early. Because if you buy it, well, if you sell in the open market, of course, you'll get whatever the price is. So you'll kind of net out to zero. But if you wait, the longer you wait, the more that bond premium is going to reduce until maturity. Because the shorter term, till you get less yield, you get the knowledge that you're going to get par when you turn the bond in or when it matures. So the hope you have there is that when you sell it in the open market sometime in the future, there's still going to be this massive amount of buying going on by the ECB. You'll sell it back to them and you'll sell it to them for a premium. Now, what happens when the ECB is not the incremental buyer? Well, foreigners, who the hell in their right mind is going to want to go buy those bonds? I don't think so. I mean, you'd rather buy U.S. bonds or bonds from somewhere else around the world that has a positive return potential to maturity. So think about that and watch your bonds. I mean, we just we have a small amount of exposure to global bonds on an unhedged basis now. We were hedging it for about 2 years. We took the hedge off, I'm talking about 2 months ago. We started to remove the hedge from the currency basis. That was a good play, actually, because obviously we know the euro and other currencies really went down against the dollar. So that currency hedge really helped us out a lot. But when we look at now moving forward, we're starting to get a little more concerned about this. Maybe not immediately, but 5 years down the road, we're going to scratch our head and say, we don't want to be the last ones out here. And a lot of others are saying the same thing. So think about that when you're looking at any of these bonds, bond funds, and maybe the ETFs. We prefer looking at mutual funds, as we've talked about in past episodes, for emerging market or foreign bonds, which is a much more inefficient marketplace. And when it comes to inefficient markets, we would like to be more in an actively managed mutual fund. All right, enough of that, but we'll put this chart of the year-to-date and month-to-date returns of international markets on the show notes for the Disciplined Investor. Go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com and just click on this episode. You'll see a few different charts and all the different ones from Singapore and UK and Taiwan. All the returns year-to-date and month-to-date will be there. So you can see what the range is and the incredible power of stimulus and how we're seeing that the idea of stimulus or opening up markets to other investors has really done an amazing job at pushing market prices significantly. Well, how about oil? I think we spend a few minutes talking about oil and what's going on there because it has been quite a volatile commodity right now. And there's a few different ways you can actually play that. If you haven't taken the opportunity to trade it, now this is a trading discussion here. You can do so through some ETFs. These are, well, you have to be short-term minded when it comes to this discussion, okay? So let's just get that on the out in front so we can kind of go through this. And one of the things that you want to look at is how it's been trading so nicely within a range of about, we'll call it 40, approximately 48 to 52, give or take. Now, again, I put a couple of charts up. I wanted to show you a 60-minute chart of oil crude. This is the commodity, the continuous contract. And again, you can use this as a backdrop. You can also look at USO as an example. It doesn't trade 24 hours, USO, so we're not going to get as smooth as an information source utilizing some of the concepts we're going to talk about. But again, if you don't have a charting package like we have and what we're showing you that can give you a 24-hour continuous contract for the futures, and if you're just using USO, same concept here, generally speaking. But what we wanted to look at was, what's happening with oil? Why is it seeing such a nice pickup, even in the face of an amazing amount of inventory build? Last week's inventory build on Wednesday, upwards of 12 million barrels, was astonishing. Now, you remember something, this Iranian deal, whether it goes through or not, and maybe it's a good time to mention this whole word framework again, is just so aggravating. It really pisses me off. And I wrote a few different quote-unquote journalists, reporters, whatever you want to call them, with my thoughts on how they have so poorly informed the public of what's really going on. Now, meanwhile, you have this word framework. This is the word that was bantered around by politicians that were involved in the negotiations and meetings. Such crap. Such a disappointment. Because what is a framework? It's nothing. I was really wondering, what is it? What are they talking about? They have a framework for an agreement that they're negotiating and discussing. That tells us nothing. A framework is nothing. Anytime they use this word framework, the whole idea is they're telling you they have nothing in writing, nothing agreed upon. They just have bullet points that they're discussing that they need to get through. This is the framework of our discussion. These bullet points, this time frame, these ramifications, that's the framework. So what? That doesn't mean either side has agreed to anything. And the BS that is going into this, and that we're buying this, by the way, shame on us. If the Iranian deal goes through, I have no idea why in the world we'd want this to happen. It would seem to me to be one of the low points of this administration's global I love you campaign, you love us. Kind of like we'll call it the Obama Barney campaign. I love you, you love me, we're a happy family. Oh, come on. We know they hate us. We know that they're not going to comply. They just want to do whatever they can in order to get sanctions lifted and to do what they can to beef up their nuclear program without us interfering. That's the fact. If someone would just be brave enough in the government to say that, it would be just wonderful. Just for once. We've had these kind of deals before. At least we've had a negotiation that was supposed to be adhered to, some decisions, some agreements. We know that Iran did not agree to any of these, and we just kind of said, okay, well, we're going to put some sanctions, lower oil export requirements, or that we're going to buy, and you know, all this other stuff, right? They didn't comply. They're not going to comply. And by the fact that we saw this commentary come out that there was a framework, and then the supreme leader in Iran saying, well, we don't think we like any of this, I don't even know why we're barking up this tree. Now, putting politics aside for a second, let's talk about really what does happen if some of this goes through, whether or not it's a good deal or a bad deal. If Iran's sanctions are lifted on oil exports, there has already been estimates that about $15 per barrel can be cut from the price. Now, whether or not this is priced in or not right now, I really couldn't tell you because there are other mitigating factors involved in the whole area of oil that, you know, have really been much more important, right? Because we know that inventories already have been off the charts. We know that when we look at the rig count that has been dropping by, I don't know, 40 or 50 rigs per week, because this is too much oil. I mean, it's overflowing. So we did see that there was a significant drop after the big rise that we saw last week on the thought that, oh, well, the Iran deal's not going through, so we don't have to worry about that extra $15 coming off the price of oil. And then it was revived and brought down. Then we saw the massive move down. Anyway, here's the interesting thing, that even with all the news and all the news items that are out there and all the negotiations and political posturing and things that are happening, oil so far has been playing a pretty nice range. Actually, we've been doing pretty well with the very short-term trading, maybe a one-day, maybe two-day, more likely a one-day hold of things like either USO, SCO, or UCO. These are ETFs that track pretty well with oil and the oil prices. And if you look at the 60-minute chart, you can see pretty well, we highlighted the what we call our autopilot. This is an algorithm that we developed for TradeStation clients. If you have TradeStation, you can get this. But I want you to just look at the red and the green. It shows how the algorithm called a long or a short on the both the daily and the 60-minute. Both of them have been pretty accurate. What I find really interesting is this range that we're playing. You have to play the, you know, when it moves up into the range, about 52, you short. When it moves down to about 48, you go long until there's a break. So, for example, last week, that 52, we were long into that move. We closed the position about $52 per share on the equivalent of oil. Moved up to about 54. We reshorted as it started moving back down because it breached and went beyond, but then came back in, could not hold that level, could not hold the resistance in that point that was really an area that looked like it shot the moon out above and beyond the prior resistance, and then it just couldn't hold, and lo and behold, it dropped about, I don't know, 7% from there. It started to come back again on Friday, which is really interesting. So this daily volatility can be played pretty successfully, but remember something, and I want to be very clear to those of you who do not do short-term trading and you think this is really easy. It's not. You need to be careful, and here's some of the rules that you need to adhere to. If you want to play the insides, as we call it, the range of where resistance is a support versus breakouts. Let me give you that difference. A breakout, let's use the same range we're talking about, 48 to 52. So a breakout is where you play the long side when it breaches the 52 and starts moving upward through there, and you can go long, and you just want to play that breakout where you realize that other people out there that may be short are going to start closing their positions, covering their shorts, squeezing. And there's obviously a trend change that has been going on. The same thing holds true for the short side. If you break the 48 level on the downtrend, what happens is that a lot of players that are long are going to close their positions. sell, and shorts will come in also and reshort and move the price down. So those are breakouts above or below the points of resistance or support. Again, as an example. Now, playing the insides or the consolidation range is different. What you do is you would go long when support is held and you start seeing a bounce back up. So back to 48, let's say that the price moves from $50 down to 49, it goes to 48, 47, 47 and a half, 48, it holds. And it's kind of holding there. Let's say on a 60-minute chart. Well, you'd go long at that point, looking for a rebound up until the next point of resistance, playing the inside. When it gets to the next point of resistance, you hold it, you're long now, and sell it as soon as it makes any kind of a, we'll call it a turn down again. Once it starts turning down, you flip from a long to a short, and you play the next run down to the 48 level. Once it hits 48, now again, this is a lot of theory going on here, but this is the concept that you need to really understand. Now, here's what you need to be aware of. Technically, if you're going to be playing the insides, you also need to be playing the breakouts. So as you're playing this, and as this is coming down into 48, and you're short, if it breaks 48, and it holds, since you're playing the insides, you rotate back to a long. If it continues going lower, you hold, and actually, you would probably want to increase your short position. If that holds again, you cut out, you close, rotate, and if the shares start moving back above that 48 level, you go long. If it continues back higher above 52, and let's say it gets to 53, 53 and a half, and it starts traveling and trending up above the resistance level, you add to your long until there is a turn. Once that turn happens, let's say it hits 54, and start rolling back to 53, you'll close your long position at that point. Now follow me here. You'll close that long position. You'll wait to the breakdown below 52 to short again. You won't go short unless that break of the resistance to the downside. So you can close your long if you want, or partially close your long, take some of the profits, and then wait for that to break down again below, and then go short. So you got three types of things that's going to happen here, right? You're either going to be short from the move below resistance, the top line resistance down, and you're going to go short again, long, add to your short position below the support line, a break of support, because then it can really fall down. So you can be short in that scenario. You can be long inside, so there's two different ways you can be long or short inside the range, or you can then be long outside the range. So again, a way to look at different ways to play a volatile market like oil, which has a very good reversionary type of process. And a lot of it has to do with the dollar. A lot of it has to do with global politics and, of course, supply and demand. But right now, you would probably agree with me that the move from the lows that we saw on Wednesday back up has nothing to do with supply and demand, but really more so due to political instability and politics. Possibly what's going on in Iran, possibly what's happening with currencies. So that gives you a nice way to look at it. Now, you can take that information, and by the way, this is just an illustrative point, okay? But you can take that illustration and that discussion and transfer it to any particular instrument that is trading in a consolidation range, but not being able to break either side. Look for a wide range, not too wide. When you get crazy wide, things are not as good because what will happen is you can get snapped out both sides, right? It starts moving up a little bit, then down. So you're long and it didn't get to the top, and then you're long and it gets to the bottom and you're below, and so you're not going to get anywhere. You want to find something that you're finding a reasonable range and that you can see that there is a pattern existing for a period of time. And going back, always look back left on your chart. Use multiple time frames. Also look at your daily. Find out where the support and resistance is on daily. Then move it down. Move down to your 60-minute, let's say, as an example. And see what the support and resistance is on your 60-minute. Now, when you find that, What you should do is then start trading it on a shorter term time frame, understanding where the longer term support and resistance is as well. And when you have that all together, that's when you can play that inside consolidation. Now, here's something interesting. The longer it consolidates, and the longer you see that run of inability for a price to move above or below a particular resistance or support line, however you draw it, whether you use the altimeter kind of concept with what we do here, which is a volume-based study that employs the whole idea of using a market profile. And look that up if you have any questions on what is a market profile. It's a volume-based study at price and looking for when the players are really putting their money to work or whether they're taking it out. Or whether you're just going to be drawing simple trend lines, right? So you could draw trend lines at price. That would be simply saying time at price, not volume at price, because you don't know that information from just a simple trend line. So draw your trend lines. And when you see that consolidation zone thinning out, you know, getting more compressed, what happens is the break from that, whether it's up the upside or downside, is usually dramatic. You need to be ready. That's a very important feature of this whole idea of trading the inside consolidations and breakouts. So once you are sitting there, and by the way, please do yourself a favor. No preconditions. Wipe any thoughts you have on why this is happening out of your mind when you're trading. Just trade the chart. If you think oil is going to drop because of these reasons and it's not, and you're going to fight it, you're going to lose. If you think that oil is going to go up for all these reasons and it doesn't, and you fight it, you're going to lose. So what you want to do is just use the price as the determinant of what you're doing with your trading. If it doesn't break above resistance and it keeps on consolidating over a long period of time, you get this very long range of consolidation, up, down, up, down, up, down, up, that cannot break up, cannot break out for any reason. Well, maybe the short side is a bit better, but when it does break, because so many players are probably in there saying, hey, I don't want to own this, I want to short this, and they're causing the resistance to appear, the existence of this resistance is because a lot of players are selling at those levels, are shorting into those levels, are not allowing the stock to increase in value, and because the long side of players, the buyers, are not also not moving it up higher, or not doing anything to participate in the long side. So there's no buying interest, but a lot of selling interest, putting a cap on that level, creating a line of resistance. But when it does move above, you could see significant spikes that you cannot ignore. Once you move above that line, you need to say, okay, I'm long, I'm going to go longer, I'm not going to be short. At least until it comes back and breaks down below. And realize those are the times, those are what you're really looking for. So if you pay attention to the speed and the veracity of a move, usually it's above or below the resistance. In between the consolidation, hey, great money to be made if you can master that process. I'll call it 70% of the time. If you can do that well, you're going to make good money. But watch what happens when those breaks occur. They're violent. Because now all of a sudden everybody's pouring in. Remember we said that if you break to the downside, add to your shorts? Well, what's going to happen? Longs are going to blow out. Shorts are going to be added. You're going to get a double. Double push on the direction that it's moving. So keep a watch on that very carefully. Take a look at the charts that we put up there. Just two charts, simple charts that will show you some support and resistance. And also the algorithm that we use to kind of come up with when to break in, when it's breaking down, and when it's breaking up. It doesn't play the ranges, but the breakups and breakdowns will give you the trends. And that's what the coloration is, the red and the green. All right, what else do we have to talk about? Some economics coming up next week. Nothing great, but we do start earnings season. And we're going to see a lot of the banks coming out next week. We're going to see what happens there. Already they have been grousing about how they don't think that they're going to have decent numbers. We saw that the yield curve is thinned out a little bit, compressed, hasn't really widened for them and created a significant amount of benefit. But yet, We may see some mortgage activity up a bit and trading activity up a little bit. There's been some warnings on that, but it still looks okay. What else do we have to talk about? DH Unplugged. We've had some great shows lately. I don't know if you've listened to myself and John C. Dvorak. Tuesday, Wednesdays, Tuesday nights we record it and goes out late Tuesday night. Wednesdays you can pick it up, or Tuesday night you can pick it up. We talk about some great things. We had some good discussion last week about the chicken IPOs that are out there. We had some good discussion about a variety of different stocks. We also do a we have a game that we play where we pick stocks and we look at both short and long side. He has his theories. I have mine. We track those. You can see that over on dhunplugged.com. There's a link to the right that says the weekly stock picks. And it's a live Google spreadsheet. And this is something that's interesting. You could use Google. I don't know if you know this, but you could use Google spreadsheets to actually track stocks or to find out more information about stocks. What Google spreadsheets does, which is pretty cool, is it brings in information from Google Finance for you. You could actually look up the mnemonics and code fields, let's say across the columns, to have a column that is EPS or PE ratio, market capitalization, the name of the company, the last price of the company, maybe dividends per share. And then you put a symbol in, let's say, in one of the cells, and it will populate all that for you automatically. So what we did was we came up with a spreadsheet that will allow us to track the performance of a short or a long position inside of this quote-unquote stock-picking game. And if you notice, it's color-coded. It's smart enough to know whether we're short or long and how to calculate. We did some calculations. If you know how to use Excel, you can use Google spreadsheets. And we calculated if we put in a short, well, it knows, okay, you're a short, therefore, you know, you want to use this price and subtract it out, and we're going to be a short calculation versus a long calculation. And dependent on the returns, what we did was, if you look at the total return column, we highlight it and color it with conditional formatting to show us what is the actual, you know, the return. If it's bright green, it's over 20%, green is under 20%, and red would be a loss. So the ability for you to utilize this for a portfolio tracking mechanism is pretty cool. And I'm sure what we did is just scratching the surface of the things that you can actually do with this. It's probably all sorts of different templates that are out there and plugins that you can use for this, but very powerful feature inside of Google spreadsheets that you could use to track stocks. I bet you there's some way to alert stuff as well. We use different programs for that, but a lot of people always want alerts. It's important, so you don't have to sit there and stare at a stock chart all day. Just, oh, when's it going to do what I want and miss the other one that was moving because you had this chart in front of you all day. All right, what else? Let's see here. I'll mention. So it was interesting, I thought, that over the last 2 weeks we saw that the Arrow algorithm that we use to manage a portfolio, if you haven't checked this out, this is a pretty intense algorithm that calculates more than a dozen different proprietary indicators that we have to see where overbought and oversold levels are for the S&P 500. We use SPY, S-P-Y, as the benchmark. Now, what was really interesting was that we saw that the trend was changing. Still a long position, still long-term uptrend, or I'll call it a medium-term uptrend, when it comes to the algorithm, and that trend was changing. And we saw that slowly but surely, combination of reasons, the trend was starting to move lower and lower and lower, and we started to get a pretty good level on the downside, still not at the point, though, where we could where the algorithm would declare, okay, trend is over, change out, move from this position to that position. As a matter of fact, it got to 2/100ths of a point. 2/100ths of a point. That is thin. Still saying the trend is still long. And I thought the next day, if we saw any kind of move to the downside, we were definitely going to crack and change things around and all that. But meanwhile, what happened? It just stayed there for a day and then turned ever so slightly up. And called it correctly, stayed long, and moved higher with the markets throughout the week. Right now, we're in a long position. What's really nice about this is that it gives us another insight into markets from the level of or composite of overbought, oversold, or trending up or trending down, long-term, short-term, mid-term. And that's what I like about this. It gives us a nice diversification. And if you haven't checked this out, I'm really suggesting very strongly you do so. It's a $50,000 minimum. Go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com. There's a little link on the right that says arrow. Click it, put some information in. You'll get the report on performance, how it works, what's involved, 15 years worth of history. You know, this thing is up like 3,000% over the last 15 years when we did all of our back testing and study of this. 3,000% compared to like 280% for the S&P 500. Think about that. Because what it does is it looks for inflection points that we could find where there's a significant trend change. Now, there may be, I don't know, 5 trades a year, 10 trades, 25 trades a year. All of that's listed inside of this. You'll find out all the details and information about the historical performance as well as the historical reference of trading and fees. All the good stuff is in there. Really cool, though. Something we're real proud of and something I think you should check out. The arrow strategy that we manage for clients. So if it's like some of the stuff that we talk about, this is one of the ones that I think is really neat. And because it's an algorithmic trading, we extract all the emotions, change up the diversification that you have on the rest of your portfolios and give you an added advantage of a different style of investing so that your investments are all aligned with maybe traditional, maybe some short-term trading, but also algorithmic trading. Things that the institutions are doing now is available to you. So check that out. All right, what else do we have? I think I had a couple of questions. Let me just take a look here. All right, yeah, I do. I have a question from Naga that was sitting around for a little while here. And Naga writes, thanks for everything that you do. And I've been listening to your podcast for a while. Very informative. Thank you so much, sir. Or ma'am. I don't know. Naga. I don't know if it's a guy or girl, actually. Anyway, here's the question. The question is on Altria and others in the similar companies in those areas. In the past podcast, you had some concern on tobacco-related products due to the electronic cigarettes. I see a valid concern of this, and there's generally more concern on health due to smoking, and many companies, cities are trying to restrict on smoking and are discouraging smokers. So on these thoughts, I closed my position on Altria a few months back. But on the contrary, the stock is going higher and higher, growing about 51% in the past year. What's going on? Well, here's what's interesting. I think we talked about this too, that many of the traditional cigarette companies, tobacco companies, were seeing the same thing that we were seeing in terms of e-cigarettes. Now, one of the things you have to realize is that, well, the e-cigarette revolution was new, cheap, and what happened? Many of the big tobacco companies buying many of the e-cigarette companies or coming out with their own e-cigarettes. So what did it do? They just played along with it as well instead of trying to fight it. So when you think about what's going on in an industry, unless there is competition that is absolute, remember something, the tobacco companies with all that's gone on, with all the cancer discussions, everything that's happened, they have done pretty well. It's not just domestic, it's around the world you have to be aware of. With the e-cigarette revolution that has gone on, a lot of small companies were the players in that, and they were just bought up. So when you look at this in the future, look a little bit further into really what's happening with the industry and what the potential is in terms of maybe many of the companies, instead of saying, well, we're going to fight them, saying, well, we're going to join them. And that's kind of what's happened with the cigarette companies, plus the fact that they realized it was a major problem and kind of shored up their finances. Another question from Hashim. He writes, hey, Andrew, I religiously listen to your podcast. It's down earth and yet highly intellectually stimulating. Hey, thank you so much, sir. I like that. Yes. A rare combination. That's nice to hear. Thank you so much. I appreciate that, Hashim. I have a question. What are your thoughts about infrastructure-related stocks? In what circumstances would you recommend them? And what would you say or when would you say is this a time to stay away from them? I mean, infrastructure stocks are interesting. You know, one of the plays that you hear about from all the governments around the world is, oh, we have to increase infrastructure building and, you know, our bridges are falling down, our roads are crumbling and tunnels are caving in. I think infrastructure stocks are good. I think in the initial turn of a market trend, you know, when you see the industrials and these kind of companies do well, the problem you have right now is when you think of an infrastructure company like Chicago Bridge and Iron or Alcoa or Caterpillar, these kind of players are really on a global basis. The problem comes in that there's a slowdown around the world and the dollar's moving higher and there's a lot of competition. I think early stages of an economic recovery, okay, early stages of an economic recovery. So what you have is, we'll call it from peak to trough, recession. Recession coming out of recession, right there. Right there is when you want to play the infrastructure stocks, as far as I can tell, and run them into where you have the potential to get through most of a recovery. The top of the recovery and into the roll down are not the times to play infrastructure stocks at all, in my opinion. And that's where we are now. Top of the recovery, continued recovery, and into a drawdown. Now, whether or not we go back into recession or depression, I'm not talking about that. If you just look at the trend and the wave of where we are, we're much past recovery stage, right? Initial recovery, and that's the best time to play those infrastructure stocks. Folks, if you have any questions, you can send them to me at any time. Ask Andrew at thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Of course, follow me on Twitter. Andrew Horowitz is the handle. And listen on DH Unplugged. Hit the blog, disciplinedinvestor.com. Thanks for joining me. I'll see you again next week. Bye-bye.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contains forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor, regulated in various states. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.